Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Yesterday, the U.S. men's national team beat Costa Rica in penalty kicks and is advancing to the Gold Cup semifinals. Benny and I chat a lot about the U.S. men's national team, the state of the program, also the Club World Cup itself. This is one of those episodes where we are not really doing the evergreen, traditional evergreen content, but rather injecting a little bit of the news cycle in here because I think it's quite important. I mentioned it previously that if we don't do this, what ends up happening is the mainstream media, the mainstream guys, the reporters, the journalists, the guys who are all bought and paid for by MLS or want to be bought and paid for by MLS, come out with their agendas and their narratives. And unfortunately, it is a complete distortion of soccer reality that they put out there. And that does a lot of harm to the fan base, does a lot of harm to practitioners, and in particular does a lot of harm to new practitioners in the space, new coaches and new parents of young players. And unfortunately, I don't have a better word for it, that whole cohort gets indoctrinated in the ways and the views and the narrative and the agenda of Major League Soccer, which is a problem. Hence why we are doing a podcast episode dealing with the news cycle. How is it that you should be looking at this U.S. men's national team, really? How is it that you should be looking at these MLS franchise and their performances in the Club World Cup, really? Because what's out there is a lot of nonsense. All right. Before we get started, per usual, coaches, you can go to 343coaching.com. There are free coaching education programs there and premium coaching education programs for you there. Parents, you go to 343masterclass.com. That is where you're going to get the codification of our decades worth of experience here in the American soccer landscape, doing pioneering work in youth development, in player development. And you need to be aware of these sorts of things so you can guide and mentor your kid as best as possible. So 343masterclass.com for you parents, 343coaching.com for you coaches out there. And if you happen to be coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, gold nuggets galore per usual. Here we go.
All right, bro. You watched the game yesterday, I'm assuming? USMNT?
Only the penalties.
What the fuck?
I couldn't be bothered, honestly speaking. We were finishing moving, and then family came over, and we had to go to the park and stuff like this. And then I got back to the house around 3:30, something like that, 3:30. And I set a little alarm for myself to wake up at 4, you know, to watch the game. And alarm went off at 4. I'm like, you know what? It's the U.S. men's national team. Who gives a fuck? And I'm like, I reset the alarm for 45 minutes more. I'm like, I'll wake up at halftime. Watching the second half and see how things end is plenty, you know? Alarm goes off at halftime. Like, dude, it's just the U.S. men's. Who gives a fuck? This is stupid. I'm so exhausted. I'm not turning this shit on. No. So I slept through it. And then, I woke up just naturally. At the end of the game, and like, oh, I wonder what's happened, you know? So I opened up my app and the game was tied and it looked like it was going to PKs. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll get up for PKs. That's cool. So that's what happened, man.
Well, I don't know if you saw any of the highlights or anything, but with 5 minutes left, dude, the U.S. was about 2 inches away from it being a completely different narrative today. I mean, Costa Rica had a clear chance outside the box. Players smashed it, hit the post. I thought you were watching the game, so I'm guessing like, oh, Gary's gonna be happy about this.
I think me not watching the game is a perfect representation of the state of the team, the state of the federation, the state of American soccer. Nobody really cares, Benny. I mean, this has been a recurring theme before the Gold Cup and now during the Gold Cup, where the stadiums are kind of empty-ish and nobody's really attending all that much, especially relative to previous eras. People are over it, dude. And I think a lot of it has to do with people waking up to the shit show that it is. And what I mean by shit show, it's not that the team sucks. It's not that, you know, it's not for sporting reasons. Let me put it to you that way. I think a lot of it is for extracurricular reasons that many in the fan base are like, who cares?
Yeah. No, that was my exact thoughts, Gary. And like in the group stages, when I would see the stadiums empty, you know, I'm thinking like, okay, like group stages, you know, maybe people can't make the game. And then before the game, I turned the game on. I'm like, all right, it's the quarterfinal. This is like, you know, a semi-important match. I'm assuming the stadium's going to be full. And first thing that you see is there's 5,000 empty seats in the stadium, bro. It's like, dude, nobody cares, bro. It's insane. Nobody cares.
Nobody
Me
cares.
and listen, dude. Now, okay, Guatemala semifinal. I have a feeling that they're gonna smash and move on to the final. It's a joke, bro. And we'll see if even the stadium is empty for a final, dude.
And well, no, because the Mexicans are going to show up, bro. When the Mexicans show up,
Oh yeah, dude. 100%.
who
Hundred
does
percent.
Mexico play? Honduras? No, Panama? No, Honduras, right?
Let me see. Honduras. Yeah, dude. Mexico, US final. It'll be packed for sure, dude.
It's the same old with this Gold Cup stuff. The Gold
Yeah.
Cup's a joke. It's always been a joke. And it serves the function of padding the stats of the US program and padding the stats of the Mexican program and padding the stats of all the players. That's its function. And unfortunately, when the stats get padded because you're playing against nobodies, the fan base here and the media are like, oh, look how good Diego Luna is, or oh, look how good this new generation of players are. And they're not doing that very much this time around, but it still is happening for a select handful of players. And interestingly enough, I've always said this, and people need to understand, the US men's national team is used as a platform to elevate and prop up the chosen ones, right? And it doesn't necessarily mean the best players. It just means whoever got chosen to be elevated. And it could be due to sporting reasons. And if it's due to sporting reasons, it comes down to the taste of the people doing the selecting, Benny. And a lot of it, and I'm serious, more than people can even imagine, has to do with non-sporting reasons as to why players are elevated. And look, when they get elevated, all of a sudden, it's a shopping window for overseas teams. And it looks like a good chunk of these players who have been elevated are going to get their opportunities overseas as a consequence, even though, and with all respect to the players, because I have nothing against any player, but with all respect, even players who don't deserve it, you know, are going to get their crack. So
Yeah.
yeah, Betty, we might beat Mexico, and then the narratives are like, we're so back. You know what I'm saying? And if we don't beat Mexico, the media will spin it however it is that they want to spin it, depending on who they look as their friend and who they look as their foe. If they think that they want to spin it so that Pochettino, the evil foreigner, is not better than the American coach, they'll spin it that way. You see? And if Pochettino wins and the US wins, they'll prop up their MLS players, obviously. Oh, see, MLS is so good, blah, blah, blah. Look at this player, this player, this player. And then they'll diminish Pochettino's work. You know, they'll probably do something like, even with Pochettino tinkering with the lineup and not doing things well, you know, they still pulled it out. You know, the players pulled it out of a hat.
Dude, it's so funny how the narrative changes like minute to minute. Costa Rica came back and leveled the game. Like initially, the US goes up. Everybody's like, "Oh, Pochettino's the best. He's making it, you know, great adjustments." They level it, and then all the fans are coming out. What is Pochettino doing? Why isn't he making more subs? The energy's clearly dropping. Like, what's wrong with this guy? After the game, they win. It's like, wow, I'm so happy we have this. You know. Just minute to minute based on what it's crazy, bro. It's crazy.
It reminds me of, I'm sure you've seen all these movies during Roman Empire times with the gladiators or anything that happened in the Colosseum and or the games in general, and you just have the crowd kind of roaring and having swings, mood swings back and forth, back and forth. It's just minute to minute entertainment for everybody, and rarely anybody peels back the onion. You know, because who wants to peel back the onion, Benny? That's not what they're there for. They're there to be entertained, and they're being entertained. You know what's also interesting, Ben, is the days previous to this match, a rumor, however, rumor came out that, oh, Pochettino's interviewing for, you know, this English Premier League team or championship team or whatever the heck it was. And everybody, without verification, without asking Pochettino, without anybody, everybody who has the agenda of hating Pochettino immediately came out to slander him. Immediately. And then it turns out that Pochettino had no such interview, hadn't even spoken to anybody overseas about any sort of job. And nobody really has walked it back. You know, nobody has apologized to say, oh, I jumped the gun. I'm sorry, everybody in my audience. No, nobody says anything, Ben.
Who are the people starting these rumors here? I mean, do you think there's people within U.S. soccer that were so opposed to bringing Pochettino on board and only want MLS Plant as the national team coach? I mean, what's the point of even starting a rumor like that?
It's not U.S. soccer. It's not U.S. soccer because U.S. soccer, you know, wants their decision to work out, even though they were forced into making this decision, because then U.S. soccer is going to get heat for it. You know, U.S. soccer people don't want heat coming down on themselves. It's everybody who... it's the establishment, right, that is outside of U.S. soccer, whether it be MLS people, MLS media, MLS propagandists. Those are the originators of all the bullshit and all the smears.
Yeah, crazy, bro. And dude, imagine if they would have lost yesterday, like the outrage and fire Pochettino. This guy's the worst coach we've ever had. It's crazy, bro. Like I said, dude, they were totally 2 inches away from that being the narrative this morning.
2 inches. Two inches. Yeah. No, it's soccer's crazy, bro. Soccer's crazy. It's just I wish our fan base would graduate more quickly. Maybe I'm asking too much of the fan base. I want our fan base to be like the sophisticated ones that we have overseas. And because I don't want people to get it wrong, we do have a sophisticated fan base here in the United States, but that particular fan base doesn't give a shit about the U.S. men's national team because they've been disenfranchised and they've been ostracized, Benny. Like, I know a lot about soccer and I have a soccer culture, as do you, as does your family, as do, you know, the circle that we run with, you know, the hundreds of thousands or millions of people here in Southern California, in particular, and in Texas, who are of Latino origin, Mexican-American origin, who have soccer in their DNA, soccer in their veins. All these folks don't support American soccer, the U.S. men's national team in particular, because they have been ostracized. They have been removed from the system. They are not allowed to participate or have the opportunities that the monoculture has. So we do have the culture. So the people that I'm referring to that I wish they would hurry up and learn a thing or two are outside of that group of millions that I just described.
Yeah. No, a massive percentage of the fan base is, like you said, casual fans, want to just, you know, have something to do on the weekend and go and have fun with their friends. It's like, dude, here's another problem. Like, okay, Matt Freese saves 3 PKs, you know, fantastic, great, you know, great job, heroic effort. Now everybody thinks this guy is fucking Superman. But the dude, if you see this guy on the ball, like in possession, shocking, bro. Shocking. Like, there's no way that Pochettino doesn't notice that, doesn't see that. And if you're trying to build out and establish possession as a team and your keeper has a brick for a foot, bro, I mean, there's just no chance to. But now this guy's a hero. Everybody's going to say, like, oh, Matt Freese, this guy should be the starter of the World Cup. And it's like, come on, guys. Did you watch the game? Did you watch the last game where this fool gave a shocking turnover and fucking led to a goal? I mean, it's crazy the nervous that people, like you said, it's like the gladiators, bro, minute to minute. Oh, this guy's made 3 saves. Let's make this fool the starter for the World Cup, bro.
Yeah, while I expand on that, maybe you can look up Matt Freese's age and where he's played, you know, once he turned pro, because I also saw a remark online after the PK victory from a law professor at UCLA. You may have come across him. His name is Stephen Bank. I think he does decent work at kind of disentangling legal cases that concern soccer. So he talks a lot about the NCAA situation. He's talked a lot about the NASL versus US soccer versus MLS case, you know, over the years. And that's kind of in his lane. He's not a soccer guy. He's a law professor. But he made a remark after the PKs. He's like, oh, so it looks like the MLS next strategy of, you know, there are no tie games. If any MLS next game is tied, they go to PKs. And it looks like that's really developing, you know, our keepers or something. Like, bro, one good performance by a keeper at the national team level. Oh man, MLS Next is developing our PK shootouts for our keepers. This is the type of stuff And to his credit, look, I'm paraphrasing. I think he left a crack in the door open that he might be wrong by saying, perhaps this is a consequence of this new policy and development. But the damage is done. And this is strategic from people who have at least a frontal cortex. Yeah. When you want to persuade somebody, you leave a little bit of a crack open. You don't make definitive statements so that it seeps into somebody's brain a little bit more smoothly. But I know the intent here. No, I'm sorry. Having PKs when you tie a match or whatever is not going to develop our keepers. Okay.
Yeah, dude. And even when we get to the World Cup, bro, we're in the round of 16 against fucking Portugal. You're not going to PKs, bro. You're getting smashed. Dude. So that doesn't even matter.
Right. If we run up against like France or run up against Holland or run up against Brazil or Argentina, it ain't happening.
You get Sebastian Berhalter to take a PK.
Dude, like when he was breathing heavily, I'm like, yeah, he was breathing heavily. And I'm like, man, I wonder if he's thinking about that his family's in the stadium and all the history and the drama the past 6 years. I'm just curious if he thought of all those sorts of things. And I'm like, maybe this fool's going to miss. I wonder if this fool's going to miss. He might miss. He misses.
Bro, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like when he's walking up, you could just see it on his face. Like he's like, in his mind, he's like, oh man, my dad's here. My dad was a former coach. I have to make this PK. And sure enough,
I don't want to be seen as a nepo baby.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, you could just read it on the player's face if they're gonna make it or miss. But now it was funny when they flashed the camera right to Greg after it, and Greg's like, what? And then he's, it's okay. It's like, come on.
Right.
Anyways,
oh boy.
Matt Rees, 2017, Bethlehem Steel, zero appearances from 2019 to 2022, Philadelphia Union. Then he got demoted to Philadelphia Union 2, which is where he got all his PK practice.
Got it. Okay. So he actually did play MLS Next just a couple of years ago.
Yeah. He had 30 appearances for them. So probably went to like 15 PK shootouts.
Hey, it kind of goes to show you too, the look, I don't want to say that keeping is easy by any stretch of the imagination. And I've said it a million times, I don't know anything about goalkeeping, but they do have a much longer career than field players. And, you know, it takes a little bit longer, typically speaking, for them to get their shots at the highest levels. So the guy's already, you know, well into his 20s and he's playing MLS Next, right?
Yeah.
And in a matter of minutes or months, look, he's on the national team and becoming a hero. So anything can happen in football.
Yeah, no, that's true. What do you think about, I don't want your complete honest opinion about Diego Luna, bro, because you mentioned him earlier, everybody's hyping him up. Everybody's saying this is the next guy in line. And I know I'm going to get a lot of heat for saying this, but I honestly don't think he's that good. I don't think he's a world-class center mid. You compare him to top center mids in the world right now. Does he look decent against CONCACAF opponents? Maybe a little bit. I think his turnover rate is shocking. I think he forces a lot of things that aren't on. He does have, you know, some decent flashes on the ball when it comes to dribbling, but I think everybody's just hyping him up, dude. And like, dude, okay, you saw them in the friendlies before the Gold Cup started against European teams, and he was invisible, bro, you know? And bro, it fucking bothers me so much every game. And don't get mad at me for this here, but I watch the English broadcast because I want to know what these fuckers are saying.
That's fine. Like, that's fine. But
every fucking game they have to bring up like, oh my gosh, this guy's a hero. He broke his nose and he went back into the game. Now we're going to bring it down to our sideline reporter who talked to Diego about the game, about breaking his nose, and this guy's on the ball. So the announcer's like, oh, here's Diego Luna, the cult hero who broke his nose and re-entered the game. Like every and I guarantee you, they're going to keep bringing it up, bro. It's like, okay, great. This kid showed he has balls. He went back in the game. Like, okay, forget about it. Move on. Why does that have to be your analysis of him every single game? How about actually talking about the way that he's playing and not how big his fucking balls are? Like, okay, I respect that about him. You know, he's a hard worker. He showed, you know, courage and bravery, but actually how about analyze him, bro, not just talk about his broken nose. Yeah. I don't know. It bothers me, bro. Because Gary, I'm telling you, they spend at least 10 minutes every game talking about that. Like, move on, dude.
Yeah. Well, that's why I can't stand the English broadcasters. That and obviously the nonstop propaganda for Major League Soccer. It's just disgusting. And it's players, obviously. So they're working their best to market the chosen ones. And you know what I mean? And just special interests. So if you're looking for analysis, like legit sporting specific analysis, you aren't going to get it. One, I don't think the broadcasters in the English language networks are really all that knowledgeable or have deep level understanding of the game. Even the ones who have played an entire professional career, like a Stu Holden and all this sort of stuff, there's massive blind spots that are instantly identifiable, that like he's never coached. So he has no clue about coaching. He has no idea about man management. He has completely gone. Number two, we talked about it in another recording of ours, his pedigree and philosophy and view of the game, look where it comes from. It comes from the typical Route One, non-possession, non-South American, non-Spaniard, non-French sort of way. It's like English slash college soccer, American soccer sort of lens, sporting lens that they look through it. So the analysis is shocking. There's no subtlety to it at all. And then number three, Benny, we just talked about this being here in America. It's being analogous to the Roman Empire and the gladiators and people in the Colosseum. And okay, so the broadcaster in the Colosseum is going to be saying, and look at him. Did you see the double pivot of his sword? You know, it's exquisite technique, you know, and it takes 10 years to develop this thing. And that other guy has no clue how to swing a sword because of X, Y, and Z. The people don't give a fuck. The people just want the broadcaster to raise his voice when it's exciting and lower his voice and talk shit when it's not, and back and forth and back and forth. So I don't know. I haven't watched English language stuff for a while. I do once in a while. I'm guilty like you are. I'm like, okay, I probably should tune in just to see what these fuck faces are saying. You know what I mean? Because then you get a pulse again on the state of the narrative, a pulse again on the state of the brainwashing.
Yeah. Well, okay. So two things here. One, I want to hear your analysis of yourself, of Diego Luna. And two,
okay, yeah.
In the Mexican broadcasts, you know, what are the differences of them between the English commentators? Is it way, because listen, like I understand Spanish, some Spanish, Gary, but like when I tune into those guys, I mean, they're just fucking talking so fast for me. I'm like, fuck, dude, I miss like 7 out of 10 words basically, you know? So what is their analysis like, you know?
Well, hold on. So you,
I know,
you
dude, I'm getting it.
No. You jumped to a conclusion that I think the Mexican broadcast is good and has they're terrible too. Fucking terrible. Mm. Okay. They don't know dick either. Better than the English, of course, but so bad also, Benny. So
really?
Mexicans are terrible. I'm kind of used to like, you know, Argentine broadcast or something like that. The Argentine broadcasters know their shit inside out, left, right. You call it, they see the game. And then, you know, obviously when Mendes was playing in Portugal, I would tune into the Portuguese, well, actually it was Gold TV. So it was also Spanish speakers who were broadcasting. And you can just tell that they know football, man. So the options are limited. I don't blame people who switch to the Mexican broadcast. It's way better than the English, but they don't know what the fuck's going on either, Ben. And they do have propaganda as well. It's clear that for them to continue on with their gigs, they have an agenda on their plate. The Argentines don't give a shit apparently about agenda. I've never detected it. They just go hard at everybody and anybody, and they just don't care, Benny. On Diego Luna, it's a little bit tough. I think what is helping him out a lot, aside from having been chosen and given opportunity after opportunity after opportunity after opportunity for him to finally, you know, get his footing as a professional, which is very important because a lot of players might get one or two sniffs of the field, little opportunities, and for whatever reason, they're not given any more sniffs or opportunities. Sometimes it's sporting, sometimes not so much. And then they're done, you know, but Diego has been given a lot. I don't want to take away his merit, however. Aside from that, it seems like the kid does have the mentality component. I don't know Diego. I'm an outsider looking in. It's very hard to judge. But judging by the way he carries himself, it seems like the kid has something upstairs. And I don't think that you can also reach his level of consistency, albeit MLS, right? And CONCACAF. I don't think you can reach his level of consistency without having at least a base level mentality to be a good pro. So I'll give him that. Now, on the physical attributes, I think he's severely lacking. He's really, not the type. He looks like SpongeBob in a lot of ways, a nice little rectangular frame or square sort of frame. He is quite mobile for having that frame. And there have been other players in global football who have had a non-optimal physical frame and have been very good players. One that always comes to mind is Turco Mohamed, Argentine footballer, played many, many years in Mexico, became a Toros Neza, I think it was Toros Neza, yeah, legend, is now a coach, a very good coach at it as well. If you just look at, maybe we can insert a clip from the old days or something, it kind of reminds me a lot of Diego Luna. From a results perspective, look, we got to give the kid some credit. He has put up numbers, but it's MLS, right? So a lot of people put up numbers in MLS, and then you go to a significant competition, and then that doesn't exist anymore. Number two, going back to the opportunities, he was luckily picked up by Real Salt Lake, and Real Salt Lake isn't a franchise that historically goes out and purchases international footballers of top grade and of top quality. So he has also that fortune of going there and getting all those opportunities versus as a central midfielder like he is, if he were to, go to the LA Galaxy or go to LAFC or something like that, like you're in some trouble at that point. Does he deserve a crack at overseas? I think so. I think so. Will he be successful? Hard to tell because of all the intangibles that we've talked about on this show for years, Benny. Unless you're very, very close into the inner circle, you can't really assess like the mentality piece, which I think is what'll make him or break him. What level? I think a good place for him would be like the Belgian league. I think another good place for him might be, the Dutch league. I think he could do quite well. So I think those two would be a good spot for him to land. Can he do it in England? I don't think so. Can he do it in the championship in England? It's going to be very difficult, I think. Again, the body sort of thing, the type of football that they play. Can he make it in Spain? Ooh, that's rough. Maybe if he's playing La Liga 2, second division in Spain, get his footing there. And folks, let me be clear. The second division in Spain is better than MLS. Like it's not even a question, all right? So that would be a step forward for him. Portugal, maybe. So I guess to put it all together, Benny. Maybe you wanted me to talk about technical and tactical sort of things too. Sorry.
I've been waiting for that.
Sorry. Because I'm looking at like high level, like what is this sort of ceiling sort of thing?
Right.
Technique wise, I'm going to say above average MLS player, above average American MLS player. I'm just doing high level still. Tactical wise, above average MLS player. He understands the game more so than your typical white boy. Sorry, white people out there, look at my skin. I'm white. It's not a racist thing. I think you all know what I mean by a white boy. It's somebody who went through the pay to play, suburbs, affluent, upper middle class sort of thing. Never really played pickup games. I'm sure Diego Luna played a lot of pickup soccer. You can see it. He's kind of like a street baller, Benny. He's kind of raw in that way. He's not as organized or tactically organized like the Europeans are. He's more wild out there. Actually, he's a lot like an Argentinian, if I might say that. I know that's high praise for him, but Argentinians are kind of wild as well. And it's not until the Argentines go to Europe where they're kind of domesticated and they're told, no, this is your little patch of grass that you patrol and you don't move outside of this blade of grass. You have to stay here. And these are your roles and responsibilities. And if you drift outside your roles and responsibilities, you're in big trouble, sir. So I don't know, Ben. I don't know what else to say there. What's his best position? Probably an 8 or a 10. Is fine. It seems like he has a lot of stamina, even though his body type is deceptive. It seems like he can run kind of all day. Did he run out of gas when you saw him yesterday or no?
A little bit towards the end, yeah. And then I think that's why Pochettino ended up subbing him too. The legs got heavy.
Got you. He has nothing special. So what I mean by that is if you look at Jack McGlynn, he has a left foot that is special. All the other qualities are like meh, but he has a very special left foot. If you ask me what is special about Diego Luna, I'm going to have a very hard time answering you that question. Because for me, he's an energizer bunny more than anything, kind of like a Brendan Aaronson, who maybe has a little bit better of a through ball or a little bit better of an eye for what is the right play and what is the wrong play. But that's it. There's nothing special about the kid. And the Americans here are crazy. They're like, oh, he has all this sauce and, you know, all this flavor. And I don't think so. Maybe because Gary, he does a little pirouette here or there once in a while, but it's not crazy out of this world.
No, Gary, he does, bro. But against MLS Collins, bro, or talking CONCACAF opponents, again, you look at him against European teams and he was invisible, bro. And dude, I tend to agree with you, and I don't want to take away from the kid's merit because you've seen, I mean, this kid has worked his ass up to get where he is. And does he have a good mentality? Yes, I think so. Does he work his ass off in the games? Absolutely. Right. But the thing that bothers me is just the American mainstream media or the ignorant fans that are like, oh, this guy has a ceiling to become the next Messi, bro. Or this guy has a... I swear, bro. Look at some of the... Just type in, bro, Diego Luna, Messi on your Twitter search bar. And like, I'm telling you, fucking fans are saying like, oh, this guy could be the next one. Or even to say, like, this guy can crack it in La Liga, or I'm telling you, bro, like that's how much people are hyping him, bro. And that's why I'm saying, like, is he a good player? Yeah, I think he's good, but he doesn't have that ceiling of a Messi, you know. And we always say Messi's an outrageous outlier, you know, but I don't know, does he have a ceiling to become world class, Gary? I don't know. It'd be tough.
I think a lot of the problem too, Ben, is that he's 21, so he's relatively quite young. He's 21 years old, has probably close to 100, if not 100 professional games under his belt at age 21. And so we get really excited here in this country. Like if you're 20, 21 and you have all this experience and you've scored a considerable amount of goals. But here in this country, we haven't lived through so many cycles of players that also showed a lot of promise when they were young and then fizzle out. So people still get excited here. I think that's part of the issue.
It's like the Freddy Adu effect, bro. Remember that game?
Indeed. Indeed.
I think I was, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 when this guy was like 16 playing in MLS. That guy was my hero, bro.
Well, Freddy Adu did have that special stuff and did look the part and did have all these sorts of skills that you're like, oh, wow, that legit kid right there, that kid is legit from a skills perspective. But it also goes to show you how the fourth component, the mentality, will just destroy you if you don't have it. So that's what gives me a little bit of hope with Diego. If it is indeed true that he has the mentality to overcome challenges and difficulty, he can go very far as a pro. He can play in Europe, no problem, because he'll just overtake the weak ones, Ben.
Yeah. No, dude, my
hope. Here's the other thing. Last thing. I'm not so sure he's had sporting challenges yet, because he started in USL, El Paso Locomotive, I think it was. Yeah, I think that's what it was. And he played. He played games. He wasn't on the bench and he wasn't, you know, he was playing, and then he goes to RSL and he plays and he's playing games and he's a starter and they don't take him off the field and stuff. So the real test is what happens when a player is on the bench and not just for one game and not just for 5 games or 6 games. What happens to you when it's half a season that you're not really used? Do you collapse or do you keep going? And I think that will be the true test. Now, yeah, I'll leave it there. I'll leave it there. No. I was going to go off into a tangent to other American players, like Johnny Cardoso is going to Atletico Madrid, and it's like a we'll see sort of thing. But let's keep it to Luna.
Yeah. Now, my hope is that he does make the move overseas soon, you know, because like you said, the games here, Gary, are meaningless, you know, even if he is a starter right now. Okay, great. You make the MLS playoffs and okay, cool. Like there's no like fight to survive type mentality here in MLS. You know, I think any move overseas to any league, he's going to have, I mean, every single day fighting for his job, fighting for his life, basically. And I think that's just going to, well, significantly. So hopefully he does make that move. It seems like right now MLS is trying to make him the guy or the face of MLS. So I think they're going to do everything in their power to try and keep him there.
So that brings up another problem. It's the problem of money. Yeah. So if you go to xthedata.com and you type in Diego Luna, you get to see his historical salaries. And it looks like he's on $450K a year now. And since he's on the senior men's national team, and for the foreseeable future, he'll probably be there. Obviously, you know, the agent doesn't have to do a lot of work. The European teams will come to them inquiring and asking, and that builds leverage. And so MLS has one of two choices. Let him go now, and when his salary is only 450K, so somebody in Europe will pay over 450K for his salary. That's not an issue, okay? Given his age, given what he's shown, and given he's on the U.S. men's national team. That's not an issue. But MLS also, historically, and still to this day, takes another route. It's like, no, we're not going to sell you. We're going to offer you a TAM deal where you're going to make, you know, 800K or 900K or something like that. And Diego might take that. You know, it's a lot of money. And if you take that, all of a sudden your European window closes a lot, Ben, because two things happen. One, MLS's expectations for a transfer fee are going to go through the roof because now the player is on a longer contract. They have him by the balls and they're paying a lot of money for his salary. And then, so that's harmful. Less European teams are capable of purchasing him now. And then number two, Diego might get comfortable. He's like, oh, I'm on 900K. And then number three, there aren't that many European teams who will pay their players in the seven-figure range. And I can hear American MLS fans already, oh, what are you talking about? McKinney makes seven figures and Christian makes seven figures and Tyler Adams makes seven figures. Yeah, but they're at the peak with the peak clubs at that point, which is my point. Are the peak of the peak clubs going to say, oh, that Diego Luna kid? Yeah, bring him over to the Premier League. That's tough. Or, ooh, that Diego Luna kid. Yeah, bring him over to Real Betis, you know what I'm saying? Or bring him over to Atletico Madrid or Barcelona or Real Madrid. Because even like the bottom half of La Liga teams, they aren't going to spend $30 million transfer fee or whatever it is and then pay him seven figures. So this is the golden handcuff predicament, Benny, right? If he stays, the window overseas is going to be more troubling for you. Unless, here's his one escape valve. He actually gets selected to play in the World Cup in 2026, and he actually plays in the World Cup in 2026, and he actually does really well in the World Cup in 2026. Then you've got top five leagues, probably, and some of the top clubs who are capable of paying his salary and capable of paying a transfer fee. Does that all make sense? Like, the time is now, like you said.
Yeah. Well, let's see if it happens soon. Well, you bring up a good point, man. I think he stays in MLS one or two seasons or one or two more seasons. He's not only is going to get comfortable, but I think eventually these European clubs aren't going to want to come after him, you know. But to your point, Gary, about the national team elevating players, I mean, if he does in fact play in the World Cup, which I think he will, and he starts, I mean, his valuation is just going to go up so much. So we'll see what does end up happening, man. You know, I hope he moves to Europe, dude.
That's the place, Benny. That's the place to be. If you want to make it in soccer, if you want to fulfill your potential, you go overseas, you go to Europe, man. It's the end of the story. If you're like one of the best basketball players in Spain and Croatia and wherever, like you don't say, oh, I'm going to stay here. No, you're like, oh, the NBA wants me. I'm going to the NBA. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Ben, all right, dude. For folks out there who aren't aware of the golden handcuff situation, I also encourage you to look into Jesus Ferreira. Again, go to xthedata.com, type in Jesus Ferreira, and you'll see he became a homegrown. And then when all the 2018, 2019, 2020 exodus to Europe happened by all his compatriots who said no to MLS, look, he got elevated and he's on DP money now, right? He had a chance to go to Europe. Remember, Jesus Ferreira was hot on the national team too. He was killing it on the Gold Cup. He actually made the World Cup roster, played a little bit of World Cup, and didn't go to Europe. MLS offered him a DP contract. He's making $1.5 million or whatever it is that he's making now. And look, he's not even doing anything anymore. He doesn't exist anymore. He's not going to Europe at this point unless he's willing to take a massive salary hit.
Yes. He's chilling now, bro. He's comfortable. Yeah. He has his money. I'm sure he has his girl. He's living the dream.
And that's fine. That's fine. I don't judge anybody, but I'm speaking to the fan base here. If you want your guys or our guys to fulfill their potential and see how far they can go and all this sort of stuff, you take the other route.
Yeah. This reminds me of a tweet you posted a while ago. Let me see if I can find it really quick. Oh, you know what? It's pinned to your top when you said, the reality is that one MLS player on the USMNT is too much. Three is criminal. Put six on the field and you have a rec team, you know? If we want any chance of ever being a top nation in the world, dude, we got to get our guys out of MLS, bro. And we can't continue to have MLS players on the field, dude. We'll see.
It's true.
Because I think this Gold Cup is kind of a joke, honestly. And for Pochettino, it's just a chance to say, hey, I gave all these guys a chance. But I think when it comes time to the World Cup, maybe you'll see one MLS guy in the field, dude. Hopefully not.
Yeah, we'll see what Pochettino does, because I sympathize a lot with him, you know, just having worked with Brian all these years. And I just kind of understand like the conversations and the psychology that go on when you're a manager. And if you have on your hands really good players that are, say, on good clubs and doing well at their clubs, but they're not 100% committed to your cause as the manager, but somebody who might be a little bit less skilled or less pedigreed, or maybe not even less skilled, just not renowned for it, but is 100% all in on what you want, there's a high probability you go with that guy. Seriously. And if you inherit a player pool, listen, and Greg Berhalter was in charge for 6 years, I think, with all due respect to him as a practitioner and stuff, I just think that our system here has massive problems and it's compromised and corrupt. When you have 6 years of damage done to the national team program and a particular player pool was elevated that maybe should not have been elevated, you come as Pochettino and you're like, oh my God, this is a shit show. This player pool is not good enough. You scramble and you scramble your technical staff to go out and look under every single rock to see if there are gems that should have been elevated during those 6 years and were not elevated during those 6 years, or even brand new gems that you can bring on board that you can craft and make your own. So I think a lot of that is what's happening here. And the fan base is going crazy. Oh, get this right back or left back, Arfskin, get him the fuck out of here. Or who's the number nine now? The big, tall, why is this guy on the team? Pochettino's in love with this guy. He starts him every game. He's terrible. And all stuff. I understand. Maybe Pochettino sees something in training that all of us don't see. And they're like, maybe he wants a pure striker like of these capabilities. And he's like, I am desperate. I don't believe in the other guys in the pool. I'm desperate here. I want to see if this guy can actually make it happen for me.
Yeah. I'm curious if Pochettino had conversations with Greg, and you know, I'm sure if they did, and Pochettino took it with a grain of salt, but you know, Greg giving him his recommendations on these guys, or hey, these are the problems that I had with these players in the past. So I think that is partially the reason that Adjei Meng is continue to start Curry because, yeah, dude, maybe, like you said, maybe there's been problems in the past with the other guys, or again, he sees things that we don't see. You know, there's a lot that the media pretends to know and nobody knows, bro. Unless you're in that inner circle, unless you're part of the staff and the team, you don't know what's going on in training, you know, so.
Totally.
I do kind of think that guy is shocking though, but I don't know. Maybe Pochettino will put your mom. Yeah. No,
I think so too.
I mean, I texted you on their first, I think, friendly game of this cycle. And within like 20 minutes, I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Jimmy is shocking, bro. He kind of reminds me of like a Jossie Zardes type, dude.
Yeah. 100%. Almost carbon copy.
Yeah. Shocking, technically.
I'm just giving Pochettino it's the benefit of the doubt, because I just know, like, we as practitioners, Benny, we see what the outside world say, and when they talk shit or they question you, Benny, for your lineup decisions or your substitutions or your decision of the manager, and you're like, yeah, but you guys have no clue as to why I'm doing this stuff. Like, zero. It's completely clueless as to why you made the decisions you made, Benny, as a coach. And 100,000,000%, it's the same thing with Pochettino. It's like, this is a legit seasoned manager at the highest levels of the game. And he's making decisions. And you've got all these guys here who've never kicked a ball, or maybe they kicked a ball, but they never managed, or all saying, oh, Pochettino's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing. On what planet am I living on, dude? Pochettino has his reasons, okay?
Yeah. No, dude, it happens even at the lowest of levels, dude. Even when it comes to club soccer, you have parents questioning you. Move on to high school. You have parents, players on the team, administration saying like, oh, and why are you playing this kid? Just get it shocking. College, you can never make everybody happy, bro. But once you reach the level of Pochettino, I mean, us as practitioners, you got to give him a little credit and respect and say like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing, bro. You know? So
yeah. I think there's a fraction of the fan base and media also who just don't want to admit that they were wrong. They have been telling everybody, oh, we have a golden generation. This is the bet. We have a Ferrari. And in the past, you know, those other U.S. men's national teams were Pintos or something. Like, we have amazing players. They're doing amazing things. They're in Europe on the biggest clubs. And even the guys who are still here in MLS, look, they're crushing it and killing it, and they're the product of this amazing homegrown policy initiative with the academies and all that stuff. They've been telling us the future is bright forever, and it turns out, like with Greg, flop city, the future was not looking bright, and then with Pochettino, it's much of the same. The team looks like whatever, even when the quote-unquote A-listers are there. It's like, eh, whatever. Maybe they just don't want to admit to themselves and to the world, you were wrong. They were wrong. We do not have a golden generation. The U.S. has not made all this progress that you said that we've made. We still suck balls like we've always sucked balls. But instead of admitting that, you look at the manager. You look at the scapegoat. You're like, ah, see, Greg sucks. Ah, see, Pochettino doesn't know what he's doing. So you blame the coach instead of saying, you know what, we just suck at soccer. And the system that we have in place is not conducive to player development and is not conducive to having a great national team.
Yeah. Oh, Gary, with the current system that we have, you can get any world-class, top-level international manager. You can get Pep Guardiola. You can get, you know, Ancelotti, Klopp. It doesn't matter, dude. As long as we have the system in place, this USMNT team is always going to be shocking. Always.
It just doesn't matter, man. It doesn't matter. I've said that many times, many times. And I've also said many, many times that the real reason that I don't want like an American guy with the national team is because the American guy, 99.9% probability that coach or manager is compromised by MLS. Like he's always going to say the right things and never rail against the system that is American soccer, and that it's all broken and needs to be completely reformed and revamped. Like, an American guy won't say that. because his future career prospects depend on him playing good little boy, you know, to MLS and good little boy to the Federation versus somebody from the outside, like a Pochettino, like an Ancelotti, like a Pep, like a Jurgen Klopp, like you name them. They don't, their careers, their livelihoods, their reputation doesn't depend on MLS and doesn't depend on the U.S. men's national team, Benny. So they can speak their mind and say whatever the fuck they want. Kind of like a Jurgen Klinsmann didn't depend on MLS either. So he started speaking his mind, which is ultimately what we need from somebody who has that platform and that stage. Like, they have the biggest microphone, right? The U.S. men's national team manager has the biggest microphone in all of American soccer. So we need whoever's in, using that mic to say the things that need to be said, right? That MLS is harming us in one way or another, that we need promotion and relegation, that we need a meritocracy when it comes to professional soccer in this country. We need somebody to be able to say that. That's why I want a foreign coach, Benny. It's not that I thought a foreign coach coming in here was going to make the U.S. men's national team get to a World Cup semifinal or win a World Cup. No, I know better than that. That ain't going to happen, no matter what. So just to be clear with the audience, Ben, I never said Pochettino or Pep would come in here and change the U.S. men's national team and we'd be beating everybody. No. I want them to be on the mic.
Yeah. We need to get those types of guys on in the board of U.S. soccer, you know what I mean? Or on the board of MLS and have them make those institutional changes, because if
they
we don't,
they won't. They can't. No, they can, Benny. They can't. They can't be on either of those. That's why the most, they can't.
But if they were, don't you think that they would fucking recognize, look at this problem? There's no promotion relegation. The league here is shocking. Like, change has to be made.
No, because first off, MLS is a private company, and it's, you know, its board is comprised of the owners of MLS, you know, so they don't have people on the board who are like outsiders who are non-owners. You with me? So you can't have a Pochettino or a Pep or anybody go in there and be one of those people. That doesn't matter. And then U.S. soccer is so corrupt and compromised that the people who are on the board of U.S. soccer and have decision-making authority at U.S. soccer are all MLS compromised people. They're all like MLS puppets or Muppets. So could a Pochettino or somebody be invited to be on the board of directors of U.S. soccer? Yes, technically yes, unlike an MLS, but they'll never do that. Why would they do that? There's no reason to be doing that. They have a chokehold. And that is, again, I repeat, and the people need to understand, that is why the U.S. men's national team coach manager position is so vital, because they have the biggest microphone. And the key to all of it, Benny, is to have the fan base, all of us practitioners in the ecosystem as well, finally open our eyes to a level that is undeniable, and it forces change. It's kind of like a revolution. That is what we need.
Yeah. Well, Darren, really quick, because I know we're coming on the hour here, but just want to chat really quick on the Club World Cup, and I'm stealing your words here from Twitter. MLS in mid-season form, playing at home in the Club World Cup in 10 games, 6 points total, 7 goals scored, 18 goals against. Imagine how they do if they played away in Europe or South America.
Yeah, what about it, Benny?
I think more people need to hear that, man, because I think this tournament, for what it is, I mean, a lot of people say that the European and South American teams, that they're not taking it as serious, you know, as they would a Champions League or something. But I mean, I think it really talking expose MLS teams and let the world know how shocking we really are, bro.
But unfortunately here in the U.S., the narrative, the mainstream narrative is all, oh, MLS did so good.
Yeah.
Imagine that. They're like, oh, yeah, well, Seattle Sounders lost all 3 games, but look, it was close, and it was against amazing teams. It was against Atletico Madrid. What do you want them to do, Gary? Beat Atletico Madrid. It was against PSG. Look, Gary, it was only 2-0 against PSG. I don't even remember the score. I think it was 2-0. And then who's the third team that they played against? Was it a Brazilian team?
Oh, well, yeah.
I think it was a Brazilian team. No.
Let me see. The people are calling it the group of dead.
Yeah, Botafogo. Yeah, so they're like, oh, look, and we played really, we were very competitive and all that stuff. So, cool. It looked like you could play some soccer, you know, and the scores weren't 5-0 or 7-0 or 10-0. Fine. If you want to take that route, also acknowledge that the Europeans just played a long-ass, grueling season, you know, and not just league play, but European competition. And in the case of PSG, all the way to the Champions League final. So they played every possible game that they could play. And then being exhausted after all that, because you know this. I mean, look, if you want to say that Christian Pulisic needs a break after playing, like, whatever it is, 70% of Milan's minutes, you know, you have to apply the same logic and say, PSG players and the club as a whole played way more. They're dead. They're traveling all the way to North America to play in the Seattle Sounders' home. It's not just playing in America and the Sounders are playing in America in Texas or in Austin or New York. No, Seattle's playing actually in their home facility. All three games, by the way, in mid-season form. And you know Seattle is up for it. You know the MLS teams are up for it. You know the players are up for it because this is their opportunity to show the world, hey, I'm actually pretty good. You know what I'm saying? Pick me. Somebody in Europe, please come and offer me, you know, something. I want to go to Europe or whatever. So every single one of those players is going to be operating at 100% of their potential, while the PSG guys or the Botafogo guys or Atletico Madrid guys, they're going to be like, okay, this is the chihuahua in the group. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's not kill ourselves. Let's win the game, but you know, let's not destroy ourselves. So they're probably operating, aside from the fatigue, they're probably operating at 50%, 60% of their capacity. You think PSG went in to play Seattle Sounders like they went in to play Inter Milan, or they went in to play their other Champions League foes, or went in to play Lyon the same way? No chance, Benny. No chance. And same with the other teams. So all this to say, it's hilarious, the narratives that are spun here, like MLS did so well. So back to my tweet, Ben. By the way, PSG against, who was it, Inter Miami yesterday or whatever it was, 4-0 at halftime, at will when they wanted to, they went in and scored. And in the second half, 1,000,000% cruise control. They operated at 25% of their capacity. Uh-huh.
No, did you see Alexi Lala's tweet though? Like, somebody posted a score of the game and like he retweeted it with a picture of PSG beating Inter Milan 5-0. By his logic, it's like, oh, MLS is now better than fucking Inter Milan, bro.
Totally. Totally.
I was dying, bro.
Totally. So back to the tweet. I would love to see these MLS teams go and play the Club World Cup in Brazil. Or I would love to see them go and play the Club World Cup in France or in Spain or in Italy or whatever. Let's see what happens to them. Oh, and by the way, go play it, you know, when the other teams are in mid-season form also. Then I'd like to see what the scores are like and what the performances are like.
Yeah. No, but even like you said, dude, I don't think it would be like, you know, 7-8-0 because like you said, PSG 4-0 or not, they could have easily gone on to score 7 more goals, bro, in the second half. But these guys, as you said, they must be exhausted, bro. You take their foot off the gas and just basically cruise control. It's basically like a training session for them. Like,
yeah.
Inter Miami is the mannequins and they're just rehearsing attacking patterns, bro.
Yeah. And by the way, if you also want to perpetuate this narrative, oh, MLS did so good or they did good and they were competitive and they were so close, you know, things of that nature, you have to apply the same sort of rationale to when USL plays MLS in the Open Cup the past 10 years. So when USL plays MLS teams in the US Open Cup over the past 10 years, MLS lost a shit ton of games. USL won a shit ton of games and ultimately would take MLS teams down to the wire all the way to the semifinals and even the finals of the Open Cup, I think, in a season in the past or so. This year, MLS did better, significantly better than the USL teams. But you also have to consider the MLS teams are given home field advantage in the Open Cup for the most part. So you have the USL team going and playing at the home field of the MLS team and still giving them a game. So you want to apply the same rationale? Apply the same rationale. You say, oh, USL is like really close in level to MLS and is right there. Look, not to toot Brian's horn too much, but Brian just started coaching USL League One. It is the second tier of USL, is the third division. They're MLS, USL Championship, USL League One. He just started coaching there with a brand new team that never existed. He had maybe a total of 8 or 7 matches, competitive matches under his belt with the team. And he went and played FC Dallas in FC Dallas for the US Open Cup and split possession with them 50-50. They ended up losing 3-1, okay? But it was ultra competitive, and FC Dallas played their DP, Lucho Acosta, and played their main guys in the match. So if you, again, if you want to apply the same rationale, MLS versus Europeans and this sort of stuff, look, you got a third division club here in the United States that just formed, going to FC Dallas, playing them at their home and giving them all that they can handle. So what does that say? Are we saying that the third tier here in the U.S. is just as good as MLS or very close?
Yeah, actually, in that game, Gary, I think AV Alta had more possession, 51-49 or something like that. But it has been badass to see. I think right now they're on a 12-game streak of not losing. I don't know if you've seen the clip that Brian posted, but it's like a 25 or 30 pass sequence to goal. You know, it's just he's proving that this type of identity can be executed at the highest levels, bro, when a lot of people say that it can't. So credit to him.
And brand new. Yeah.
That's the hard part, dude. You know, bringing new players in, it's incredible.
Yeah, so that's Club World Cup for me. Man, our fan base, I got to tell you. I think there are a lot of people who do get it, though. Would you say that's true?
How many subscribers do we have, bro? Those are
we have 6,000 people who get it. Hilarious.
Yeah, dude, some people get it. I mean, that's where we need everybody else to come in, bro, and start educating people and sharing this, share with everybody that you know, because the more eyes that are open, I mean, dude, Derry, look at, if you remember the Galaxy, I think it was like 2 years ago when they were absolutely shocking. And what did all the fans do? The fans were like protesting outside the stadium, and okay, all of a sudden, the Galaxy heard the fans. They fired the general manager, whoever it was, and then, okay, they turned things around to win the MLS Cup. But that only happened because the outcry of the fans. You know, I would think that U.S. Soccer, MLS, if they heard more of the fans and there was public outcry and outrage, that change would have to happen, right? And I think that's the only time that change happens, when the fan and the public demand it, you know?
100%. Yeah. For that whole season that you said about the Galaxy, the owners ended up firing the president of the LA Galaxy, Chris Klein. Get the fuck out of here. And look, it brought about much needed change for sure. And another example is when, you know, MLS was going to shut down the Columbus Crew, you know, and just shut down all operations and make it non-existent. What happened? The fans over there in Columbus and Ohio went bananas and launched campaign after campaign after campaign against Major League Soccer, against Don Garber, against the owner or owners, and they were able to keep a franchise there in Columbus. That's the impact. That's the impact that the people have. The people have the power, and the people who are quote unquote in the seats of power, they don't want you to know that we actually have the power, Benny.
Yeah. There you go, everybody.
I want to say one more thing, because it reminds me of a message I got yesterday. I think it was on the YouTube channel, in the YouTube comments. A parent commented about, you know, youth soccer needs to be merit-based. You know, we need promotion relegation at the youth level and all that stuff. And I'm like, yeah, 100% agree. But the way to get that is to attack the professional level and say that we need it and force a merit-based system on the professional level. That is how you get the changes that you want at the youth level. Too many parents here are confused. And I understand why, because you're in your youth soccer, and not in a derogatory way, but you are in your youth soccer bubble only. Yeah. And you see the problems in youth soccer. be it pay to play, be it that the coach is not very interested or doesn't know what he's doing, be it that the club that your kid is at is disorganized and shambles, corrupt or whatever, only cares about money, whatever the complaints are, okay? All those things are true, but your ire and your focus is being misallocated because you're fighting them within that bubble and they aren't going to change within that bubble because it's the professional level that's forcing them to operate the way that they are. So until the professional game is opened up to an open ecosystem with promotion relegation, your kid is going to have this youth soccer experience forever. And I'm sorry for the parents who have kids who are 14, 15 already, because the change isn't going to come in time for you, unfortunately. So you have to play ball with how things are. But the parents who have kids who are 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, you have a chance, you know? So please try to learn as much as you can, try to understand, and direct your attention at how the pro game is governed, because that is what's fucking your kid over.
Sounds like my unborn child is in... as a promising future ahead. But you think by the time
it's possible, man,
6 or 7, that there's promotion relegation at the top?
If we still have humans playing soccer, it might be all humanoids with AIs embedded.
That'll be the day, bro.
Okay. Anything else, bud?
There's so much, dude.
Who do you think is going to win the Club World Cup?
Honestly, I don't give a fuck, but I'll say PSG.
I think now they actually do care. I think in the beginning, I don't know, I sensed a little... It's just a feeling that I had. I had a little sense that in the first round of the Club World Cup, like the Europeans weren't all that into it, really. They kind of like, oh, what is this? Okay, we're going to play. It's kind of exhibition, but it's also a tournament or whatever. But I think like by the third game when it came around, or the second game even, but especially now in the elimination rounds, they fucking care. They want to win badly.
Who do you think will win?
No, I think PSG is too much, man. I think Luis Enrique has a well-oiled machine. Did you see that reel where he doesn't say it directly, it's all indirectly, and it's in Spanish? Like after Mbappe left, you know, they were interviewing him on topics. He's like, well, look, all it is I know is that this upcoming season, I control everything. Every piece of the puzzle, I control. And like... I have to find it, Benny, but he's basically throwing shade at when Mbappe was there, maybe another player or two or something. He had players that were not obeying basically what he wanted. And now everybody is going to obey 100%. So he's got his machine finally.
That's the way it should be, dude. I like it.
Unfortunately, and some people combat this, right? Soccer has become that. The manager is playing chess and your players are the chess pieces. But for real, Benny, like you as left back, these are your responsibilities and you must be on this side of this blade of grass and not on this side. If you get caught on this side of the blade of grass, I'm substituting you. You'll never play for me again, sort of thing. Everybody obeys and are robots at this point. It's just a fact. This is how football is now.
Yep. Crazy, bro. All right. We could go on all day here.
Sure, sure.
Let's get to work, dude.
Okay, brilliant. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.